Okay. Okay. So we have two general and then, well, three. And then Minnie. Okay. So Patty, you want to take the podium?
Okay. Hello. I have to say, it's kind of interesting to be on this side of the table, so to speak. Mm-hmm. For the record, I'm Patty Hennick, 731 Bonnie Bray. In a January 9th letter to the editor, a River Forest resident called for a post-mortem on the Lake and Lathrop development. Louise made some great points that I won't go through now, but I do have copies if you haven't seen it. I'm here to amplify this recommendation so similar mistakes are not made moving forward on any future River Forest development. I hope the board will encourage President Adusi to direct such an analysis. Although in a recent Wednesday Journal article, she did already claim success when it came to the village's role in the development, while ignoring that the tax dollar investment was made for more than just property remediation. As stated in the redevelopment agreement, which says in part, whereas the village is desirous of having the project area rehabilitated, developed, and redeveloped as contemplated under the TIF plan, the business district plan, and the inclusion inducement resolution, and in accordance with the authority granted by the TIF Act and the business district law, in order to serve the needs of the village, carry out the purposes of the TIF plan and the business district plan, arrest physical decay and decline in the project area, eliminate blight in the project area, increase employment opportunities, stimulate commercial growth, and stabilize the tax base of the village. Because this project spans many years and multiple boards, I think it's important to remind people of some of the actual history. Let's be clear. The development from the beginning was a partnership between the village and the developer. It was not by any means a private development, as often stated in new narrative around the project. But for a village investment of $1.9 million in TIF funds, Sedgwick would not have had the opportunity to develop this corner. Sedgwick did not have a real financial stake in the deal, which meant really not much motivation to act. A point that concerned some trustees. Sedgwick secured loans with property that, again, the village purchased. It was the village leadership's role and fiscal responsibility to oversee a successfully completed project and to hold the developer accountable. Instead, after enabling this failed development to drag on for years, we have lost years of market opportunity. We do not have increased employment opportunities. We have not stimulated commercial growth. We actually lost several businesses in the process. And we have not stabilized our tax base. To top it off, we still have a blighted corner, and it seems we do not have a no further remediation letter from the IEPA. The developer has been defended in updates on the village website and other places rather than held accountable. Based on this, I have real concerns when it comes to future development. At some point, the village-owned property on Madison will be sold to a developer. Will the developer be better vetted for their ability to get the job done? Will there be another sweetheart deal without a real payoff for our tax dollar investment? Will we have better oversight so we end up with a completed development to expand our tax base and stabilize property taxes? Residents deserve better when it comes to decisions that impact us. As taxpayers, we deserve a postmortem on Lake and Lathrop.
Thank you, Patty. Margie Sikander.
Margie Sikander, 500 block of River Oaks. I'm speaking about the February 8th Village newsletter this evening on the ZBA public hearing, which you all probably received on email. It was on the ZBA public hearing on proposed zoning changes to the commercial districts, which, quote, are intended to clarify the code while promoting economic development. The statement is false, misleading, and makes light of significant proposed changes to our village zoning to raise building heights in some areas from 50 feet to 65 feet, to increase density, and to decrease parking spaces across our four commercial districts, all of which contain residences. Directly impacted are residents of the 400 blocks of Clinton, William, Lathrop, Ashland, Franklin, Park, Thatcher, the 300 blocks of Lathrop and Ashland, those along North Avenue and Madison Street, and all neighbors of these blocks. Three of the four districts abut single-family residences. The proposed changes impact all residents, whether residing in, conducting business in, visiting, or passing through these four districts. At the November 13th Village Board meeting, trustees asked how residents would learn of the proposed zoning changes. Matt Walsh suggested the public hearing in the Village newsletter. He suggested promoting the public hearing in social media and on the Village website. President Ndusi said the Village will do anything to get people to the meeting. Is this Wednesday Journal public notice that was in the classified section December 20th, along with the February 8th newsletter, the extent of the notice to the community? The February 8th newsletter came out 4 weeks after the hearing began. The outreach, if you clicked as directed in the newsletter, no information on the amendments appears. How's our village making light of these proposed changes? Mr. Walsh compared the zoning changes to text amendment changes for solar panels. In January, the EDC discussed allowing some properties to be zoned 65 feet within 50-foot height C3 and Oric districts, often called spot zoning. During a January EDC vote, the chair directed staff there was no need to identify how individual commissioners voted. January 11th, the ZBA had little information on the two EDC votes the prior night. The packet for the February 7th EDC meeting had no draft minutes until questioned on February 7th. Summaries of public comments at various board meetings and commission meetings omit key points, requiring residents to challenge in a short time between the draft minutes and their approval. Our zoning codes, the ZBA, and the DRB review process are protections for residents. Removal of the guardrails opens the village to development at any cost, with adverse impact to many residents. We are told not to worry. The developments will be reviewed by the DRB. When we questioned during the DRB review, we're told everything was considered months ago. It leads me to wonder, is there a predetermined outcome? Text amendments to zoning code require full notice to the entire village. These significant proposed zoning changes across four districts ethically need to be broadly communicated, not gaslighted. Another misleading statement is that nearly $3 million spent on Lake and Lathrop remediation. $1.97 million was spent to acquire properties and incentivize tenants to move. Other costs were incurred, like legal fees, cleanup, maintenance, which totals well over $2 million, but not for remediation, rather for acquisition. Costs omit the foregone property and sales tax revenue lost for years and now well into 2026 and beyond. Trustees have a role of oversight of the boards and commissions. Are they working effectively with the village board to deliver safety, well-being, and quality of life to residents? Are trustees reviewing minutes and audio, proactively checking if members have the guidance, the resources, information, and freedom needed to perform fully and equitably to maximize the benefit to residents? With board and commission openings in 2.5 months, are trustees exercising their advise and consent role on appointments for strong candidates who can equitably serve the broad community? We cannot afford another Lake and Lathrop disaster. Thank you.
We'll look into the amendment when you push them. Why the the link doesn't work on it. But we'll look into all of that to make sure that it functions properly if it doesn't. Okay, thank you, Margie. William Elke, please.
Good evening. William Belke, 534 Lathrop Avenue. I'm here to discuss the Lake and Lathrop disaster. 14 years ago, the Village of River Forest started the process of developing the piece of property at Lake and Lathrop. The reasonable goal of developing and decontaminating profit in order to expand the tax base was undertaken. It would have been difficult at that time to anticipate all of the problems that would be encountered, including economic downturns, COVID, and a developer that was clearly not acting in good faith. These problems and others resulted in a substantial financial loss to not only Village of River Forest, but also to financial institutions and numerous subcontractors hired by the developer. The financial losses include the loss of tax revenue for at least 3 full years and several more years into the future, the loss of almost $2 million in Village of River Forest TIF funds, the developer's failure to pay subcontractors, resulting in $5 million in legitimate mechanic liens being filed. And that doesn't include the $2.5 million in mechanic liens filed by the developer, who is apparently suing himself. The loss to Wintrust Bank apparently exceeds $4 million. The future cost of completing the remediation of the property and the additional expense that will be incurred by River Forest related to the future development of the property. Beyond the financial loss, there is also loss of time and effort spent by the village staff, our village attorneys, and the village advisory boards, and the village board. There will also probably be a substantial loss related to the future development of the property. The reputational loss should also be included. Although the natural inclination is to just move on, it is also reasonable to suggest that a review or examination of what went wrong be undertaken. This review should identify what went wrong and provide insight as to how to manage any future projects. This will be beneficial to the decision-making process in the future development efforts in River Forest. Providing an explanation and path forward would be beneficial to the residents and taxpayers of River Forest. It would also be beneficial to the village decision makers on the advisory boards and the village board. The review should be able to formulate guidelines in selecting and vetting any future developer. It should also provide a clear vision of the village oversight rule. It should provide an explanation as to why village TIF funds were used to purchase the property for the developer and also pay for architectural fees instead of an alternative use of funds. It should be noted that the developer, after obtaining clear title to the property, used the Lake and Lathrop property as collateral for a bridge loan from the Old Second Bank in the amount of $2.3 million. Prior to the bridge loan, the village maintained a subordinated interest in the property. Old Second Bank would not provide a loan without the property being clear of any outstanding liens. The village then agreed to release the lien it held against the property, then ensured that the remediation would be completed properly. The decision-making process that led to the village losing interest in the property should be a part of the review. In addition, when did the village learn that the funding for the development had been cut off? And also whether or not the building permit should have been pulled at that point. Also, when did the village determine that the subcontractors were not being paid? And should the building permit have been pulled at that point? The status of the remediation process should also be examined. A village newsletter and email dated 9/15/23 informed residents that nearly $3 million was spent by the developer on remediation. An accounting for an explanation of the expenses incurred and the nature of work performed by the developer would help residents understand the scope and extent of the remediation by the developer. It would also be important to all those who live in proximity to Lake and Lathrop to clearly understand the present status of the remediation. An explanation as to why the property has not received an Illinois Environmental Protection Agency no further remediation letter, and whether or not the fact that the remediation has not been completed poses any threat of further contamination to the residents residing in proximity to Lake and Lathrop.
Thank you, William. All right, Mindy?
Madam President, trustees, and Mr. Walsh, I appreciate you including the second flagpole on tonight's meeting agenda. I'm excited about a second flagpole because it will afford our village the opportunity to celebrate a whole host of affinity groups. I'm also grateful that the updated flagpole policy maintains trustee supervision of commemorative flag displays and reflects due respect for our national, state, and village flags. Last June, my son and I were genuinely touched by the pride flag raising. It was a wonderful experience, and it's time members of other affinity groups have the opportunity to experience the same pride and affirmation. Can you imagine how joyous Native Americans will feel about seeing their heritage flag displayed? Land acknowledgments are nice, but actions are more impactful, right? Can you imagine how relieved and grateful Jewish Americans will be about seeing their heritage flag displayed? Wouldn't we all like to assuage concerns about anti-Semitism in our village? Can you imagine how fun it will be to celebrate the heritage of Hispanic, Asian, Pacific Islanders, Greeks, Ukrainians, Italians, Palestinians, Polish Americans, and more? Can you imagine the pride our youngsters will feel to be seen and celebrated? The second flagpole provides a tremendous opportunity to demonstrate our commitment to inclusion, and I hope this policy receives your unanimous support. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Mindy. All right, I think that concludes our public comment side. So we'll move on to elected official comments and announcements. And maybe if I can ask you, Bob, to start, do you mind?
Thank you. I first of all appreciate the opportunity to be able to do this via Zoom tonight. Again, the work schedule has been very busy lately, so I apologize, but I have been keeping touch on certain items. Besides that, I really have no further comments this evening. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Ken?
I have no public comments today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Katie?
I didn't have any comments, although based on the public comment that we had, I thought I'd just follow up and ask about Margie's concern about the notice and the missing minutes and inactive links. Was that give you a chance to?
Yes, I can. I could touch on a few of those. One, the link that was there was not broken. It was to the meeting packet for Thursday's meeting, which didn't include the materials that referenced the zoning changes that were proposed. So we talked as a staff based on those comments to find a place to have them so they're accessible in between meetings and the like. In terms of the notice for the public hearing, the classified ad is the legal requirement for a public hearing for a text amendment. We did have a couple social media posts to go back with the January meeting and a couple that tied in with the newsletter for this meeting. And we'll continue to beef that up in advance of the March 14th zoning board meeting, where the discussion will continue again. This past Thursday, the zoning board did not discuss the item because there were some outstanding requests that they had back in January for that. So there's still opportunities for the public hearing is still open. There's still opportunities for the public to voice their opinions on it. The zoning board made it clear at their January meeting that they are not in, they're not going to act quickly and not in a bad way. They want to do their due diligence on based on the comments that they got. And it is a significant amendment to the zoning code. The comparison for the solar amendment was really just more of a process one. The text amendment is the same process. That's a lot more simple, a lot less controversial, frankly. So that was the intent of that comparison at the zoning board meeting. So March 14th, that conversation will continue with the zoning board, and we'll make a point to include that in the newsletters between in the lead up to that meeting.
What's the best way for a resident who wants to know if an issue is going to be on a meeting agenda to know? Is there a way for them to know sooner than a few days before the meeting when the packet comes out?
Not officially, I guess, because sometimes we're not sure if the agendas are going to what the final agenda list is going to be until usually a few days before. We try to make a point in the reference to the zoning board. There was discussion at the village board and the Economic Development Commission going far back as last year. So it was not necessarily without consideration or without discussion at village board meetings. But we've talked about ways to post on social media what to look for in the upcoming board so that people who aren't necessarily don't have the time to look at our agenda page, we try to recognize that, try different approaches for residents to be able to access that information.
Since we're on the topic, can I ask a question if you don't mind? Is there a time appropriate for the zoning amendments where we would send letters to residents who would be affected or who might be interested to say, in general, we're going to be looking at this. If you're interested in keeping up to date, go here, you know, subscribe to this.
So a text amendment is different than a variation where there's a set radius of residents that are affected. Mm-hmm. In this case, the four commercial zoning districts include a lot of the village. And as Ms. Seacanner mentioned, it affects folks because people attend business. So the alternative would be mailing a postcard to everyone in the village, which could be considered. It may lead to a lot of confusion, but it's something we can certainly talk about. But that hasn't been the practice for text amendments in the past. And sorry, Jessica wants to add there.
So we have been putting a lot of this information in the village newsletters. And as is reported in the board packet tonight, we have a 69% open rate for our newsletters. So the majority of residents are, in fact, opening our newsletters and looking at it. Something as sensitive as a public hearing, we are repeatedly putting out in the weekly newsletters as well as the monthly newsletters and the social media posts. So that, I mean, we're doing everything we can in the most cost-effective way to publish this to residents, short of a mailing, which would be quite costly, especially to say, hey, we're doing a continuation of the public hearing. So we would have three postcards out at this point if we were to do it that way.
It could be something about a general topic, or I don't know if we send something out quarterly to residents or something like that, but it seems like it's a big issue. And so maybe if we're looking for people to get involved, it might be a way.
I might propose putting it on the water bills. We'd have to do 2 months, I think, to cover everybody, but that would be a way that we've already paid for to put it out there.
I mean, yeah, anything we can do to, of course, you know, expand it, I think is a good idea. But I got to remind, you know, again, this is a very important text amendment, but in the same token, you know, the final approval is always the village board of trustees. So, you know, I mean, but yeah, we'll do whatever we can to certainly spread the word. But I think the water bill is probably the best next best thing.
What is the social media, just so residents can know? Is it Facebook or?
It's Facebook and Twitter. Okay.
And Instagram, right?
Instagram.
And do we still do next door?
Yeah. We still do next door. Yes.
Okay. So all of those are four options for residents to sort of access and keep tabs on where these issues are. Okay.
And people do look at it. I mean, they comment. So they're looking at it. So that's
69% is a great rate. It's just not all the residents.
No.
It's hard.
And it's hard to even have them read the postcard too. Sometimes they throw it out. Yeah. So, I mean, but I think the water bill is probably a great second option.
I think also, just providing, even if it's quarterly, the procedure for public notice, so that if an issue, this may not be your issue, but another issue comes up, you know exactly how the village handles public notice and when and where to look. Now, obviously, some situations will require more and different things, but, you know, the more we can publish the procedures, the more people understand them, and we, you know, it's not just this topic, but many topics where we understand that people are like, well, when was this posted? How does this get posted? When do you post? So.
Yeah, okay. In general.
Yeah.
Okay, good idea. Yep.
And then the other, again, I didn't have any planned comments, but we had a couple of residents talk about Lake and Lathrop. Is there any update from village staff on the status?
Yeah. Go ahead and give it, and we'll be also in the newsletter.
Sure. So the court-appointed receiver continues to market the site. There was a motion filed by the developer's attorney to try and stop that marketing. That was continued until mid-March on that hearing. So the receiver is actively marketing and trying to find a new developer to take on the site. So we hope to hear relatively soon about what those offers look like and what the next steps are. It's still subject to court approval. So there's a lot of steps that aren't necessarily in the village hands, but the village retains zoning authority to review any proposals that come from that developer.
And the continuance was in till March what?
18th.
Yes. Thanks.
I think it's 18th. I remembered mid-March.
That's when the judge will rule.
We hope the judge will rule, right? But in the meantime, the motion is to stop that marketing. So until any order is entered, if it's entered, the receiver is free to market and is.
And the next receiver's report is due February 27th. So that'll be a more substantive thing in about 2 weeks.
Thanks.
Thanks, Katie. Okay, John?
Nothing to add. Thanks.
Okay, great. Rez?
Okay, good evening, everyone. Just two items. The first one is I attended the West Central Municipal Conference this Saturday morning, and the focus was on the annual legislative agenda for the local municipalities. I know Kathy Ducey was there, Lisa Gillis was there, Matt was there, Jessica was there, and some other staff members were there as well. And even our village attorney was there. So there were a number of legislative priorities that came up, but just to highlight, the top one is continues to be restoring our local government distributive fund revenue back to the full 10% if we can. Also funding for lead pipe service waterline replacements, and then leveling the playing field for non-home rule sales taxes, as well as funding for local governments and capital improvements, transportation, and planning. There's some other items as well, but those were like the highlights. The second item I wanted to talk about was AARP came out with their community challenge for their grant programs. They're offering grants that will support projects that improve public places, transportation, housing, digital connections, community resilience, and community health and economic empowerment. So I'm going to pass this information to you, Matt, unless you already have it.
We already have it, and okay. Seth has already applied.
Great.
For it.
For all
so
of
thank
them?
You for...
So are we getting millions of dollars? Just being half of
them. We'll settle for half that in cash.
You got to start off small, right? Okay. Well, thank you. That's all I have.
All right.
Okay.
It's in the mail. Well, not quite. Thanks, Rez. Erica?
I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. So as we begin, we are mindful to hold these meetings on land that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. Besides that, I don't have any other comments this evening.
Thanks, Sarika. Yeah, I don't have much either, other than to just echo what Rez said, going to the West Central Municipal Conference, although it was on a Saturday, and I know it's tough to get to meetings on a Saturday, but it was a really good one. We did have a lot of state representatives and state senators. Of course, our leaders were there, and many mayors were there, and many trustees were there. So it's nice to be part of that organization for that reason, and to have those conversations on a kind of a more casual basis. So anytime anybody can make it, I encourage you to do so, because it's well worth our time. But, you know, when they're on a Saturday, it's hard to do. I understand. All right. So I have nothing more to provide. So we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda.
N, that question just came.
Yeah, no worries. N, okay. We'll pull that. So we've got A through M then. Thank you.
I would like to make a motion to approve the consent agenda items A through M.
Okay. I hear second?
Second.
Okay, thanks, Kate. Okay, any questions or comments on those items? Hearing none, I'll ask the clerk to read each item and then take the vote.
Consent agenda item A, Village Board of Trustee meeting minutes, January 22nd, 2024. B, administration department report. C, accounts payable, January 2024, $2,779,276.13. D, January 2024 financial report. E, department monthly reports. F, payment to Springbrook Holding Company, LLC for annual maintenance, $25,486.73. G, award of contract, 2024 asphalt pavement crack scaling project, SKC Construction, Inc., $46,827.50. H, award of contract, school patching bid, Schroeder Asphalt Services, $94,885.15. I, award of contract, street improvement bid, Schroeder Asphalt Services, $612,486.30. J, award of contract, 2024 sewer lining bid, National Power Rotting Corporation, $113,035. K, payment to Dell Marketing LP for specific computer hardware, $23,002.11. L, Sustainability Commission Co-Chair Ordinance. M, Proclamation Designation Black History Month. Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Okay, so before we go on to item N, I just want to acknowledge Eric Simon, who's in the audience. And I know he came in case there was any questions on the co-chair, but it's pretty self-explanatory. So appreciate you coming out and being here. And of course, we're going to hopefully appoint our next student commissioner. So thanks, Eric. Okay, so let's move on to approving, if I can get a motion to approve item N. Is it Nancy?
I move to approve the village's outdoor flagpole display policy and purchase of a second flagpole. Thank you.
A second.
Okay, thank you. Okay. You said you had a question?
Yeah. So the first flagpole that we have is 30 feet right now. The second one would be 25. The flagpole that we have right now reasonably can hold one commemorative flag after the flags that we have currently. Is that correct?
No, our practice has been to replace the village flag with the commemorative flag in the event that there's a half-mast situation, so that when they're lowered, so it would max out at 3.
Okay, gotcha. And then the second one at 25 feet, reasonably how many flags in case, you know, whatever, but would think is able to be put out there?
I think it would be able to hold 3 as well.
Okay. That's really all I
wanted. Question. I haven't thought about it. Thank you.
Okay.
Good question. Okay. Great. Any further questions regarding the additional people? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to read it and then take the vote, please.
Consent agenda item N, village outdoor flagpole display policy and purchase of second flagpole. Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Okay, very good. All right, thank you. Let's move on to item number 7, which is the recommendations of boards and commissions and committees. I know that Manola is in the audience here. Manola, hello. Stand up. If I can get a motion to appoint Manola Avalos as our student commissioner on the Sustainability Commission. His term will end 2024, but we'll reappoint him, right? It's close.
I move we appoint student commissioner Manuel Avalos to the term expiring September 30th, 2024.
Second.
Thank you. So, before we take the vote, is there any...
Yeah, I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
I have a question. So does it make any sense, first of all, congratulations, hopefully. Does it make any sense to tie this term to school year as opposed to having it expire in September?
Well, that's the, I don't know. I mean, I guess we could do anything, but that's the term, right? What is the term?
Well,
it expires in September, at the end of September. So wouldn't it make more sense to have a student who comes in at the beginning of the year and run through the school year at minimum?
Correct.
Yeah, but we can reappoint him.
I'm not sure I understand that because the student lives here, would be here for the summer, presumably serve.
I don't know what class he's in or what status he is, but he could be a senior and his term would expire after he goes off to college. So I don't know about this individual, but just from a consistency standpoint, wouldn't it make more sense to run it starting at the school year? Just a thought.
Go ahead, Seth.
Yeah. These terms for the student commissioners being the end of September was in place before I started, but my understanding of it, or at least my best guess of it, is to allow sometime at the beginning of the school year to find new potential interested students. The two previous student commissioners we had served through the summer, and then that last meeting they didn't make as they went off to college, and then our current other student commissioner is a freshman, so he's been attending regularly through the summer, but it was try to time up, I believe, as closely to the school year as possible, the start of the school year as possible, and then go through the following summer.
Okay.
It seems reasonable.
Okay. Manila, what year are you?
Yeah. Good.
Okay. Thanks.
Well, then you'll get reappointed easily. All right. Well, okay. Let's take the vote.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Before I give my vote, I just want to say Manolo has always given such great insight and such good questions whenever I talk to you about sustainability or anything else. So I'm really proud to have you on the Sustainability Commission. So thank you. And yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Also, some comments. Manolo, I know you have terrific parents, good friends, Stephen and Katie Avalos, who are very also participatory in the River Forest. So you come from good parents, good roots. So congratulations and yes.
Okay, Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
All right. Well, congratulations, Manola. You are now officially a student commissioner on our Sustainability Commission. So we're really happy and proud to have you part of our team. So thank you. And I guess you can meet with Eric, Chair Simon. He can fill you in on when they meet and some of the agenda items, and Seth as well. So, okay, very good. Congratulations. Let's go ahead and move on to our new business. 9A, which is the approval of the police body cameras. If I can get a motion in a second for, I guess we'll do it separately. So one.
Okay. Well, I move to enter into a purchase contract for 33 body worn camera systems and associated hardware, software, and data storage for $160,000 for FY24 from Axon Enterprises, Inc.
Second.
Okay. Welcome, Chief.
Good evening, Madam President and honorable members of the Village Board. Every once in a while, we're up here at the, talking about technology. Last year, we gave an update on some of our technology that we use. And part of that was mentioning the up-and-coming body cameras. So this is, we're requesting tonight. They're sort of related, but are going to be voted on separately. So tonight, we're talking about our body-worn cameras and also in-car camera systems. Just for brevity, I'm going to kind of blend them both together. We also have a brief presentation that Deputy Chief Greenwood will be running us through. As you know, we've already had in-car cameras since approximately 1998. It was back when we used to have to load the VHS tapes in the car. If you're not everyone in the room may remember VHS tapes, but they were a thing. So coming forward to 2024 here, we're under the Safety Act. And under the Safety Act that was passed, body cameras became mandatory for agencies. It was broken down by population. So we're required by January 1st of 2025, due to we're a municipality and or county with a population under 50,000. So the goal is to have everything up and running well before that January 1st date. This has been an unfunded mandate from the state, as all of us are used to. But there has been some grant monies available, and actually the police department did secure some grant money and is working on securing some more. A couple of things just as a reminder with regard to body cameras. Police body cameras are meant to improve police accountability. They're also meant to provide visual and audio evidence that can independently verify events. And the officers wearing those cameras on their uniforms are meant to improve the civility of their interactions with citizens. Police body cameras are a powerful tool in providing direct evidence in support of prosecutions of both violent and property crime offenders. And police body cameras are a good reform tool and have strong support from members of the public, and also have been seen to reduce citizen complaints of alleged police misconduct. Having readily available footage can also assist law enforcement with personnel investigations, which also will help foster trust if a particular incident is publicized. And lastly, improve officer safety. This may also be a deterrent against crimes of brutality and other violence that is inflicted on police officers on a daily basis. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Deputy Chief Greenwood for our brief presentation.
Thank you, Chief. Good evening, Village Trustees, Madam President, Mr. Walsh and staff, and our community members. I'll walk you through these two systems that we are looking and requesting to purchase. Again, as Chief said, the body-worn camera system and the dash camera systems, the in-car video systems, are both going to be voted on separately, but they are tied together, so they're in the same presentation here. As Chief spoke about, the Safety Act requires that we have the camera system, the body-worn camera systems in place by January 1st of next year. Over the past few years, we've been funding this, knowing that this was coming, and this was budgeted for out of the CIP for this fiscal year of FY24. The budget request through the CIP was $190,000 for the body-worn camera program and $85,920 for the dash camera system. After extensive research over the past several years, we as a staff and as a department have come down to the decision that and recommendation that the Axon body-worn camera system and dash camera system will work best for our needs and for the needs of the department and the community. The company itself has a long history, well-documented, and not only in their quality, but of their service. And they are the most prominent
system in our area in Northern Illinois. The body-worn camera system features, in comparison to some of the other companies, they're more robust. This includes the multi-mic audio clarity and the other items down on the punch list here. The most impressive and biggest difference between this and some of the other vendors, is the 30-month product refresh. So we'll have the device for the 2.5 years, and then at that point, they get replaced, not only the device, but its docking station, where it's plugged in to refresh, download, and recharge. This also includes at the 5-year mark, so this would be over a 5-year period, again, another refresh for the body-worn camera systems. These devices also offer live streaming, two-way communication. So if we have an officer that's in need of help, the supervisor or another officer or the commander or the chief or myself could communicate directly with the officer to see how they are, if what they need, and see if there's anything other the resources they might need. The other reason this ties in with the in-car camera systems is, with it being the same company, the systems are not obviously compatible, but they are compatible and they work together. So the microphone from the body-worn camera works with the recording device for the in-car system and vice versa. So you get multiple angles of not only video, but also audio that all coincide together. This is the dash-mounted camera system. We haven't had a replacement of our current system in years, and again, that's why we had forecasted there was going to be a need for this, and it was included in the CIP. Again, these devices also have live streaming capabilities, very wide angle of coverage, which is what is meant by the dual view panoramic view, a little redundant. And again, seamless integration with the body camera system, unlimited cloud data storage for the in-car systems, and the installation for the devices. We don't have to go to a vendor separate from the purchase. The Axon themselves install the devices, and that's included in the purchase price. These are some of the other enhanced features of the system as you put them both together. It includes the bidirectional communication, which I spoke about, where an officer can speak to the person on the other end, which is either, you know, another officer, even the dispatch center. The video from both systems can also be live streamed. So if you need to have increased situational awareness, such as the special event monitoring, if we were having a large event, it can be viewed from remotely. You know, from the, not necessarily having to go to the scene, we can see in real time what's going on at the event. Of course, we can use the recordings and the situations for training and evaluations with our personnel. And it increases officer accountability, as the chief had already mentioned. Are there any questions on the systems?
I just have one.
Yes, sir.
I'm assuming that, just in the past, there are obviously procedures on, you know, how you wear your body cam and, you know, if and when it can be removed and everything. So my question for you is, given these new cameras, is there a need to revise any of the procedural issues to account for some of these enhanced features?
As far as the, I'll speak to what we have had, which is the in-car videos, video recording, and that has been standardize. If you're on a traffic stop, if you're going to a call, the system automatically turns on. When we turn our lights on, our emergency lights, the system activates, and they're not to be turned off until you're done with handling that incident, or until it gets to the point where the incident, the emergent situation's over, and it's going down to, like, we're waiting for the tow truck. You know, it's not necessarily going to really matter or something like that. As far as the body-worn camera systems, though, Chief's going to speak about that.
Just, I understand your question. A lot of it's mandated by law, by statute, within the Body Camera Act itself, which has been modified a little bit with the release of the Safety Act. So there are procedures when the camera is mandated to be on, when a victim can ask for the camera can be turned off in certain private areas. So there are some procedural changes that are a little bit different from the in-car camera systems. Those are dictated by state statute. IRMA, our insurance carrier, also has model policies, as well as some of the other major policy, I'll say, consultants, including Lexapol and IACP.net are some of the larger ones with regard to policy forming. So what's nice is we're not the ones making the wheel for the first time. We're definitely taking advantage of a lot of trial and error that other agencies, and I think some of the revisions within the state law too. So to try to be short in the answer, there will be changes, and some of those changes will be different than what we were under mandate for with regard to the in-car systems. And that policy will be a public document and available not only to the board, but to the public.
Thank you.
Sure.
I have a question, but it's more on the business side of it. It looks like the initial year is $160,000, and then there's an additional 4 years at $27,000 each. Is there a reason, or let me ask you this, are the other 4 years locked in? Is that those prices locked in if we're only entering into 1 year for the 160?
The request is to have that 5 year plan, because then it does include the data and storage and the software replacements for the out years. So that would be the request for the 5 year plan for both devices, for the in-car systems and for the body worn camera systems.
Okay. And I was just wondering then, should the motion reflect it's a 5 year contract for the full amount of the 270 for the one camera, and the other one is a total of $100,000.
That would be preferable. Now, I also know, which is a great question. Thanks, Bryce. Right. I also know that we've gotten some grant money toward this purchase. Is that correct?
That's correct. For the currently, we have been awarded $60,000 to go towards the body worn camera systems, and we're always in the search for additional funding. And we know that there's additional funding coming from the same grant source that we received the body worn camera system money for this fiscal year. So we'll continue to apply for that to reduce those costs, at least, if not eliminate them for future years.
So Jim, is this net of that grant then, or is that the 210?
So it's you had to get to a certain dollar amount in order to get the funds.
Okay.
So this would be, you spend the 160 in year one, and then you receive the $60,000 that we've already been awarded back as invoice, basically sent back to the village to offset $60,000 of the first year's cost.
Okay. And would that apply? Well, not maybe the full amount of the $60,000. How about the other remaining 4 years?
So for the remaining four years, we would continue to go back for that same source of grant funding, and again, other additional grant funds that we'd be able to seek through other grantors.
Okay.
It's great work. Thank you. Great work.
Okay.
Just a couple of questions. Do you expect once you have this that you're going to switch over all at once, or do you have a certain plan just in case like something doesn't work and there are bugs, then like if it doesn't work at all, you know, do you go back to the other thing or?
Yes.
So you're just going to switch over.
We are, the plan is to have it synced together, both the in-car and the body-worn camera system. Of course, sometimes all the parts for something aren't delivered at the same time. So we'll be moving forward towards that goal of having them both sync and be put on the street at the same time. But if the in-car camera systems are installed before the body camera equipment's been, let's say, loaded up, the software, everything's been tested, we would still have in-car camera working systems, and we'd still be, we know we're going to meet the mandate probably by a few months.
Okay.
So whether one comes before the other, I think the important thing to note is that we'll have some type of video system within the squad cars and or on the officer's person.
Okay. How regularly are the are both going to be checked to make sure they're working properly?
Before every shift.
Before every shift. Okay.
So that's part of the officer's and sergeant's responsibility, which is then audited by the division commander, Commander Mike Straczynski. So a lot of these procedures, once again, are dictated either by state law or by insurance carriers or by consultants that develop best practices, not only regionally, but across the nation.
Okay. And then for data storage, it looks like it's cloud storage and we have unlimited, but how long do you expect we'll keep all video that is obtained in, under one shift?
Well, 90 days is, I believe, the mandated standard per law. But within that also is items that will be permanently saved or saved for trial. And those are also dictated by policy and also statute. So we would be following those guidelines to make sure a video isn't immediately erased when it shouldn't be.
And then just one question from your presentation. It sounds like you'll be able to get voice commands, or you can go back and forth on the camera. It sounds like how does that interrupt with what you might be getting on a radio or something?
Well, it's meant to also enhance the safety of the officers and the public. A lot of times, remember, when the officers are called to a scene, they're there to assist a member of the public. So if their main radio goes down, this is an enhanced feature where supervisors, the dispatch center, if they have access to it, can speak directly and check on the condition of the officer, watch the video, and also advise incoming units that this officer's radio, let's say, is been knocked off his belt. And also on the other end of it, it's an enhancement in addition. We don't want to do less with regard to communication. We're always trying to enhance communication, and this allows us with this feature. And they're really calling it a next generation feature.
Okay. Yeah. And the concern for me is like if you're getting two different things, one from the other, but it sounds like maybe this is like a secondary source of communication besides the radio. Is that
this would be more in an emergency type situation. Okay. Yes.
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just had one more, and I realize we're talking about the purchase of the equipment, but procedurally, what is the expectation, given this is new to the community, for like, can a consumer automatically ask for, you know, something happens at Walgreens. Can somebody say, I want to see the tape right now, and you have to produce it, or what?
So that is dictated elaborately in the law,
mm-hmm.
and it's separate. So it's covered in part. It's related to the Freedom of Information Act, but it has its own rules.
Okay.
And it's set forth very, very clearly and in great detail.
Okay.
Chief, when do we think our officers are going to start wearing the body-worn cameras?
Well, once we hopefully are approved for the purchase, we will get the current deadlines with regard to the equipment orders and the delivery dates. Right now, just based on what we know, it could be 60 days, it could be 90 days, or a combination thereof, where some equipment comes in earlier than others. We also have to make sure that we're in line for installation, because Axon does their own installation with regard to the in-car camera systems. But we will keep the board updated. We'll also be advertising this not only on our social media and Village website, but also newsletter introducing the officer's new technology they'll be using in the street. And it will be discussed also at our community safety meetings that we do quarterly.
Thanks.
I got one question. Maybe it's a slightly technical one. You know, given the, I guess, the surgence in cybersecurity and what's happening and just hacking and systems, I guess my first question is I assume this is a pretty sound, safe, because people could hack into it. And if so, if there is a hack into our database, what kind of disaster recovery are we going to employ here?
So there should be a combination of on-site storage and cloud storage, and also individual Let's say if there's something to be used for a trial or prosecution or for an internal investigation, there should be multiple saves of that same file. Axon has to operate under CJIS compliance, which I know some of you are familiar with. So they have to meet the same guidelines as the Department of Defense and other federal, state, and other county agencies. And that's also one of the other reasons why Axon is considered one of the leaders in the industry itself.
And just to add to that, Axon has a redundant server farm for the data stored mainly in one case, in one location on one side of the country, and then again stored separately just for
smart,
very much for a disaster recovery situation, like as you mentioned.
Yeah, that's smart. Good. Sounds great. Thank you. Okay, any further questions?
I think I'd like to amend the motion to reflect.
Please.
So I'd like to amend my motion to read that to authorize to enter into a 5-year purchase contract for the 33 body-worn camera systems and associated hardware, software, and data storage for a total of $270,458.99 per the payment plan that's in the contract.
Which is combining
Axon
both of these
Enterprise
motions, basically.
Well, no. This is just for
the number one.
Just
because you're adding the additional years.
Correct.
Okay. May or may not be necessary based on the grant.
Yes.
The authorization
is there.
It doesn't have to be brought back.
Okay.
Correct.
Very good. Who seconded? Are you? Erica?
Erica?
You okay with that? Yeah. Okay. Very good. Okay. Sounds good. Okay. Then having an amended motion, if you could take the vote, please.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So then the second motion, if I can get it.
Sure. Yeah. Can I move? It's similar to the first one.
Yep.
I'd like to move to enter into a 5-year purchase contract for the 8 dash mounted camera systems and associated hardware, software, installation, and data storage for a total of $100,406.40 as outlined in the payments for the 5 years from Axon Enterprises, Inc.
Your second?
Second.
Okay. Any questions on that? Any comments? I think you covered that in your presentation. So hearing none, we'll go ahead and take the vote.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, gentlemen. Really appreciate it. Great presentation. Okay, so we're moving on to our last item, but an important one. This is our capital improvement program presentation, I guess, Rosie or Matt?
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Good evening, Village Board. Tonight will be this is the first presentation of our updated 5-year capital improvement plan. This runs from fiscal year 2025 through 2029. Before getting into it, I just want to thank all our village staff for their work on this. It takes a lot of work to collect the information that goes into this 140-page document. I know everyone is kind of tired of working in Excel, but I think it's a valuable document for the public to review and for the board to justify the purchases that we made. There are a lot of important purchases that kind of keep us running on a day-to-day basis. I specifically want to thank Seth Jansen for his work kind of taking the lead on this year. It's a big help. And also Rosie McAdams and Kiki Boyer for double checking everything, making sure all the numbers match up, because that's kind of important. So I know this is a similar presentation that we've done each year, so I don't want to kind of repeat a lot of what we've heard in the past, but tonight, there's no board action required. This is just to introduce the capital improvement plan. Tonight, we'll be focusing mostly on the purchases that are scheduled for fiscal year 25 and a couple items that are a few years down the line but might be new or notable. So we're not going to go through everything that's listed in that document that was shared with the village board and listed on the village website. There's no vote tonight because this will be part of the village board's adoption of the budget in April. There might be some changes in advance of that, but we'll make sure to highlight that at the budget meeting or when it comes forward for a vote in April. And of course, these are all significant purchases, so they will require village board approval when the time comes. That's just overview of our funding sources. A lot of acronyms in there to kind of save, to try and keep it at 140 pages. There's six general categories for the CIP, and we'll kind of go through them in this order. Again, these are the projects that we're planning to perform in fiscal year 25. Village Hall improvements, there's a couple line items under that. These are just to focus on all of our three facilities. The most significant item here on the buildings and improvements is replacing the emergency generator. This is a 25-year-old piece of equipment. I think it was new when the Village Hall was rebuilt back in 1998 or 1997. So it is definitely due for replacement. Second is a piece of our HVAC, HVAC system that covers the firehouse and Westcom, the dispatch center. Thanks. There's a... we've had some issues with our HVAC system over the past couple months or years, I think, for in some instances. So in order to try and be more proactive on that, we're also set aside some money to evaluate our system as a whole so that we can kind of plan future replacement and not just wait until the systems begin to fail. There's a couple other items on here. The fire station is looking to make some improvements in their office spaces. The village board had approved office equipment purchase a couple months ago that has been since installed. It's a great improvement. We appreciate the board's support on that. We want to make sure to improve the space for other village employees. So the fire station, there's a couple projects listed in the CIP over the next couple of years. The police department, we're making sure to take care of the roll call room and the garage storage, which was put together by village staff. It's not the nicest system, so it'll be good to have a little more professional and secure system in the garage. In the public works garage, sometimes public works garage gets forgotten, I think, by our investment, so we want to make sure to upgrade their facilities there to make sure that the staff are happy coming into work and have good facilities. Notable item here, solar installation. This had come up, I believe, at a village board meeting in the past. The plan is to install a ground-mounted solar flower. There's a picture in the document. This is a solar panel that looks like a flower, just because it's kind of a shows our commitment to renewable energy sources. And our plan would be to put this at the pump station over on Berkshire, so that we get free electricity or we don't pay an electricity bill directly to ComEd at Village Hall or the garage. So part of the purpose here for putting it at the pump station is it's close to the community garden and also maybe able to help offset some costs of electricity at that facility.
Matt, did I?
Yep.
Are you taking questions?
Yes, I was just going to say, any questions?
Thank you. Did I read in the document that we've applied for a grant for that?
Yes. Or are we going to? Yes, village staff is diligently looking for grants for basically every purchase on here. I'll try and point out some that I know that we've applied for, have received, and the staff can kind of chime in if there's ones that we have missed. And thank you if you have any information that's sent to you. I know a lot of the, whether it's vendors or professional associations will send grants, feel free to send them to me and I'll send it off to Seth to apply for. So we've been pretty successful. In a lot of cases, the body cameras, we talked about a few tonight, will continue to do so. Moving on to vehicles. Here, I want to point out a lot of the vehicles that are listed here have already been approved by the Village Board due to the challenges with lead times and ordering these cars and trucks. A lot of them have already been approved by the Village Board. We'll kind of need to keep doing that because lead times continue to be a challenge for these kind of specialty equipment. Police squad car, we have one scheduled for replacement this year. There's a lot of miles put on police vehicles, so there's a pretty quick or short life for squad cars of about 3 years, and this is the only one due for replacement this year. Fire vehicles, this ambulance 215 is the only one due for replacement in 2025. This was already approved by the Village Board, and we're expecting delivery sometime this spring, actually significantly ahead of schedule, which is unique in this field. So hopefully it's a sign that lead times are shortening, but I'm not going to bet any money on that. At this time, I want to point out a new vehicle that we discussed last year briefly at the CIP, and also an upgraded piece of equipment that the fire department would like to pursue. So I'll invite Chief Gartner and Deputy Chief Bohenik just to cover these specific
items. Hey, Matt.
Before, yes.
Before they turn over, I have a question. Was there something we were going to do with the existing ambulance because it had some shelf life left on it, or was that another vehicle?
Yeah, come on up, Tom.
Perfect time.
Yeah, Bob, the current ambulance will drop down as a reserve vehicle, and the current reserve ambulance that we're using now will be sold as surplus because it's really in bad shape. So, yeah, the current one will continue. We'll be using it as a backup for when the current new ambulance has to go down for maintenance issues.
Thanks, Chief.
Mm-hmm. We can talk about this concept that Deputy Chief Bohenik and I are looking at. Currently, we're scheduled to replace Vehicle 218, which is our pickup truck that we kind of use right now for carry some of our equipment in. It's not the most efficient and not really best used in that way. So we're looking at a conceptual change on the use of that vehicle. And that is purchasing what's called a light rescue vehicle. This vehicle would be used to, as you see on the slide here, there's many calls that we go on throughout the year that don't really require a big heavy duty fire truck. This is more of a heavy duty pickup truck body or chassis with a box body on it. But it will allow us to handle some of these other non-emergent calls, such as lockouts, odor investigations, some hazmat monitoring, other special duty type of stuff that we do. But it'll also give us an opportunity to store much needed equipment that we have to keep in the station right now that we don't have out on a vehicle to go on the street because we just don't have the space or the proper type vehicle to carry that. Currently, some of it's rolling around the back of the pickup truck. Again, we're looking at enhancing our water rescue program, which we're very limited on our water rescue capabilities right now. So we're looking to enhance that, which is extremely important in a town such as ours with the river coming right through it. So this vehicle will be used to enhance all those things. So this is what the vehicle would look like, something similar to this. So like I said, it's basically a heavy duty pickup truck chassis with a storage boxes in the back. So that's what we're proposing. I know, Matt, you're looking at putting it a year or two out in the plan. But again, these are some of the advantages. A lot less lower maintenance costs than running the $1.8 million ladder truck up and down the road for some of these other calls. Reduce fire apparatus responses, like I said. Can carry water rescue equipment. It can be used for active threats. Our RTF, our Rescue Task Force equipment, can be carried on that for active shooter, active threat type situations. Fire investigation equipment, So it's going to have many, many uses and we use quite a bit. On that back slide, over the past 3 years, roughly, we think this could help about 4,100 responses that we go on over the last 3 years. This vehicle could have supplemented some of that.
I got a quick question. Mm-hmm. This is great. How do you then, are you going to get rid of the ladder truck, or how are you going to house this?
That's a separate, yeah, we're looking at doing, I'll get into that in a second.
All right. Sorry.
So yeah, we'll have space to house this over the concept that I introduced last year.
Yep.
As far as buying a Quint vehicle, which is basically a ladder truck / pumper that can do both things. So I don't know if you want me to jump into that then, Matt, but that's pretty much this concept with this light rescue that we're looking at doing. Cost is about $270,000 for that vehicle, roughly, right at today's cost. But I think it'll give us a huge advantage and save us some other money down the road as we go.
So, is it a shorter vehicle then?
It's basically as long as a pickup truck, like that.
It makes sense.
It's a little bigger than a pickup truck, but not quite.
So for this vehicle, the reason in the CIP document, this is a few years out, this would be replacing a vehicle. This is an upgraded vehicle for all the reasons Tom mentioned. It's significant cost increase too. So that's the reason for pushing out a few years on the proposed.
Okay.
We talked to hopefully we can see some savings with some other vehicles and potentially move that up. That's why it's shown as such, just due to the cost increase of our capital equipment replacement fund. We try to tie it to what the cost increases are. This is a replacement, but a significantly different vehicle. So that's why that is, we just wanted to introduce the concept tonight to kind of get everyone prepared for it. We'll be looking at pricing and grants and ways to potentially bring this forward. But there's the other item, the Quint, which was introduced last year, will be actually coming for the Village Board review in potentially the next meeting. And I'll let Chief Gardner explain that a little bit.
Did you have slides on that?
I did.
Okay. So just refresh your memory. Last year at this time, we proposed to go to a Quint concept. And what that means is long and short of it is we would replace the current ladder truck that we have right now, which is roughly was purchased in 2013, correct? So we were looking to replace that vehicle and our reserve pumper that we have right now, which is a 20-year-old engine. Those two vehicles will get replaced with a Quint, which is basically still a ladder truck, but it also functions as a pumper. So that's is what it is. We've been working, Dave has been working extremely hard on specking this vehicle out over the past 6-7 months. So we finally have finished that process. So we're ready to go for approval from the board, hopefully in the next board meeting. There is a catch though, like anything else, the pricing is gonna depend on, there's a price increase that goes into effect March 1st of this year, which is about a 4.1% price increase. So that'll kind of weigh in. But when I bring a package to you guys for the next boarding meeting, it'll be all spelled out. I'm trying. So we're looking anywhere in the ballpark, depending on how we decide to purchase this, anywhere between 1.5 and 1.8 million. I'm looking at the trade-in or the sale of our current truck, we could probably get in the ballpark of $300,000 to $500,000 range of recouping that cost of that vehicle, a few thousand for the other vehicle. But it's going to significantly lower our maintenance costs because, again, we're going to be dropping down one vehicle. And it's a significant maintenance cost on the current ladder truck that we have right now. So that's the concept. So, yeah, to answer your question, Madam President, by removing that opens up another bay for the light rescue vehicle. So,
I mean, the Quint makes so much sense. I mean, because you're replacing two
Yeah, it makes us more efficient manpower-wise and staffing-wise and how we can operate on an emergency scene.
And it seems
it's much safer. But I'll have it all spelled out for you in my
memorandum. And the light one seems pretty reasonable given the price, I mean, and what it can do.
Yeah, it's significantly. It's just
significantly less than buying a.
Yeah, buying another pumper or something like that. But it is replacing a pickup truck, so that the price difference is considerable. But so those are the two concepts that we've got included in our
CIC. Question: we just touched on these vehicles. Does it increase or decrease your staffing levels?
No, it keeps our staffing levels at the same.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Good, thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Go through this. Next up would be our public works fleet. Many of these have already been approved by the village board, including the street sweeper at a recent meeting and the two dump trucks. That was a few months ago due to the lead times. As I mentioned, those are plow vehicles. They're essential for our operations. And the street sweeper had significant maintenance costs, which are included on some of those pages in case these are very expensive vehicles to keep up. And that goes for fire and police as well. Just about every week or so, Tom will be like, oh, something's at Pete's or somewhere else getting fixed. So that's why we want to make sure to keep replacing them at a proper schedule so that we don't spend money, too much money on the maintenance side of it. Moving on to equipment, this is kind of a broad category. A lot of the operating necessities that each of the department has, the costs vary here. So I don't necessarily need to go into too much detail on here. I will point out that the police department is looking to purchase some electric bicycles. The great response for having our police officers out in the field, especially with our bike helmet proposal or a program to try and get kids to be safer and wear their helmets, and also to attend all of our events at park districts. It's at the parks. It's received very well. It's great to have our department out there. So the electric bicycles are a way to kind of improve that aspect of the department. Are there any questions on any of these?
The EV station planning, I'm a bit surprised it's kind of contingent because I know there's a lot of grant money out there for that. EV station.
Correct. Yes. I think the label here for contingent, we do have the electric vehicle plan that was completed. Yeah. So we're still figuring out what the best locations are for that. So it is still a priority. We'll make sure to look for that as well. So our IT is a separate category here. It continues to be kind of grow because it's the expectation. We saw body cameras. There's a significant amount of our operations that rely on IT. So there's a couple different categories here that we will be addressing. Wireless access points, I think, is notable to help improve our Wi-Fi. We've had some Wi-Fi challenges throughout Village Hall, because some of these equipment has reached the end of its useful life of about 7 years. Software upgrades, that has been listed in the CIP for the past couple years. The planning contribution is what we have it labeled here. Earlier tonight, the Village Board approved a payment to Springbrook. That's a yearly subscription or yearly dues cost for that. It's our financial software. Staff has been going through some demos of upgraded system, because it is kind of not being as well supported anymore. So it's something we want to improve. So we've gotten some prices on that, and we'll be moving forward with that sometime in the coming months. Mm-hmm. And then the public safety, the dispatch terminals, is effectively the computers and the associated hardware that go with them. this will be a project that will straddle fiscal year 24 and fiscal year 25. I'm trying to split up the cost there. And then PC replacement, that's just general replacement for Village Hall computers. The public safety, the reason those are, it's separate. They're tough books. They have, they're out in the field, so there's a lot, they deal with the weather a lot more than the ones that we have here at Village Hall. So it's a, and there's equipment that's needed to mount them to the vehicle. So it's a different, it's much more expensive, frankly. Right. Then the last two categories are infrastructure improvements, our streets, and also our water and sewer, which are, the street projects plan for fiscal year 25. Several of these were approved by the Village Board tonight. We thank you. There's our sidewalk program is increased as compared to past years. We're trying to really attack our sidewalk inventory to make sure it's as safe and accessible to the public. We got a grant from Cook County to help pay for sidewalks and also the intersection. Forget the name for it, but the accessible intersection, sidewalk intersections. The alley improvement program, this won't actually be part of the CIP. We just wanted to flag this, that we're done rebuilding the alleys, and there's a maintenance cost that's required to make sure that they're draining properly, to clean out the permeable pavers, that they make sure they're functioning properly. So there's a cycle that we will do, and it'll be about $50,000 to $60,000 a year. The Harlem Avenue Bridge Viaduct, this is the for the phase one engineering of the long-running goal to improve the Harlem and CTA and all the other train lines. So this will be funded by a grant through the DCEO. We are the point, we are the lead agency for this grant with Oak Park and Forest Park. So that will be going on this year. Traffic control installations, this is a reference to the project, the right in, right outs at Harlem and Lemoyne and Harlem and Greenfield. We're hoping to, IDOT's currently reviewing those plans, and we're planning to start that and hopefully finish it in the spring. It may be completed in fiscal year 24. That's what we're hoping for. But there's still some money here in the event that there's anything else that the Traffic and Safety Commission recommends and the Village Board wants to implement.
You know, we talked about some of these issues along Lake and Street and like traffic signal issues. Is that something that would?
So there,
I
would have to check that Lake Street one, maybe IDOT responsibility. I'll have to check on that in that case. There's certain maintenance agreements that we have with IDOT on most of our streetlights. Then North Avenue improvements, this is a reference to the streetscape project that the River Forest and Elmwood Park are working together on. Phase one engineering is still underway here, so this is just the cost for that phase one engineering project. We're splitting the cost directly with Elmwood Park 50-50 for that work.
On the, can I ask, on the bridge viaduct, that $187,500, is that our portion of it, or some of the other neighboring municipalities going to contribute towards that?
So, Seth, since it's being fully funded by the DCEO, we are technically, we're the lead agency as the grantee that goes back several years. So we'll get that money back. So there's no necessarily splitting on this case, I believe.
Because we're spending $187,000, but we get $187,000
back.
Yeah, a little different than this case with North Avenue, but there's money set aside for the future construction of streetscape improvements on North Avenue.
Yeah, how much is it? I mean, it's big.
It is big. So the state has money set aside for, I believe, from Austin until First Avenue on North Avenue. So our portion is about $12 million or so. So there's going to be significant improvements coming to that corridor soon. Including new bus stations and the rest. And we're still meeting staff with consultants. We're actually meeting tomorrow to go over it. And we'll be looking to have some public open houses and meet with some of the business and folks that live right on North Avenue in the coming months to make sure everyone's on space. It's still a couple years out for the construction, sure. Just based on how IDOT reviewing the rest of it, but it's exciting. This is just kind of more details about what we were just talking about. A lot of these are just annual maintenance projects. These are the list of streets that was approved tonight, actually. And the rebuild was approved, a rebuild similar. We were able to expand our resurfacing work this year due to the monies that came from the rebuild.
686 a grant, right?
Yes, correct.
That's another grant. Yeah. Another big grant.
Yep, that's a complete cost of the was part of the proceeds. Dollar sign or green dollar signs, yeah.
Should highlight.
Yeah.
The grants.
Yeah.
And then the last subject is water and sewer. A lot of these projects are annual repairs and programs that we have in place to help residents, whether it's basement flooding or lead service replacement. You'll see the largest item in the whole CIP is the lead service line replacement. And Trustee Vasquez mentioned that it's a priority for the West Cook and IML and the rest to try and get funding for that. Right. It's a very costly endeavor. It's a mandate to replace all of our lead service lines by 2047. So there will be a lot more policy decisions and items that will be coming for the Village Board in the next couple months. This is kind of a rough placeholder. Right now, there are some low-interest loan out there for about this amount. We're hoping to see those be forgiven in the future, or at least some type of grant to help offset the costs. But this is kind of just a starting point to make sure we have money set aside to start that process as soon as possible.
You want to say, right now we're surveying the village, right? So we know what that number is.
Yes, thank you. So on the front page of our monthly newsletter in January or February, was that February? We had highlighted that we have an online survey that we're encouraging or asking residents to submit photos of their water service lines to help us know the scope of what we're up against, frankly. We don't know. A lot of the service lines have been in place for decades, and we don't know the material. Typically, the older ones are going to be lead. So in order to know how many we need to replace of the 3,600 services in town, it will be helpful to have as much information as possible. And we're asking residents to fill out a brief survey. It's just an address and some photos of the service line to help us out. There's other ways that we can do it. We might get to that point but it's more disruptive and a lot of staff time. So the easiest way is to have staff. There's no cost at this time. All those will come in the future. But right now the inventory is a requirement that we need to submit to the state. And we can submit a significant amount of unknowns, but that's not that helpful because the unknown is assumed to be lead. So right now we're looking at a lot of lead in town, frankly. So, but
has that been pushed to multifamily and commercial properties as well?
In terms of the survey? Right now, it's just been the newsletter. We haven't done other direct mailings. We've considered water bills. That's right. We did include in the water bills. So we're trying to get as much as possible on that. So that project, frankly, looms over all the water and sewer projects and really a lot of what we do. It'll be take a significant amount of time for the Public Works Department to kind of help oversee this. But it's mandated by the state. Everyone will be going through the same pain, but it's for the better. There's obviously a reason why it's mandated to remove the lead for public health reasons. And then there's just kind of detail about the variety of programs that we have in place. A lot of these have been in place for several years. need to make some improvements to our reservoir up by the pump house.
Oh. Oh, we already did the hydrant replacement, not all.
That's just we have money set aside each year to replace if there if any are failing. And then conclusion in the CIP document, you'll see that there's a funding sources identified for each project, and the numbers match. The revenues coming in, at least on this plan, show that we'll be fully funding all these projects. There are some challenges that we're facing with the growing costs of all these projects. So we're trying to be creative about additional revenue sources or deferring projects or purchases as much as we can. And I give a lot of props to our staff for doing so, trying to extend the useful life of our vehicles and equipment. But there's still a lot that needs to be replaced on a given year. And in case in point, there's several items that will be technically due for replacement based on their expected useful life. But a lot of these that are in good condition or low mileage are being deferred to the future. Yes, I know there's a lot of information in that document and in this presentation. So I encourage the village board to review and let us know any questions, or if there's any other projects or items that you've are aware of or have heard of, you can feel free to propose them, and we can do research or kind of see what else. That's how the solar flower came up, for example. So this is a fluid document for now. We'll be bringing the budget presentation early April. We'll identify any changes. We might get some more accurate pricing or things that, as much work went into it, there's always things that will come up.
Yep.
And we'll have to add, and that'll certainly be disclosed and made at this very podium. Are there any further other questions?
Further questions that anybody has? Mm-hmm. The only thing I'd add, and again, it's just something I'm sure you guys are all talking about, we're talking about disaster recovery of all of our systems. I just want to make sure that, you know, we do have a disaster recovery plan in place. Mm. And I don't know if that's something that's just should be an ongoing document. If you don't have one, we need one. And if we have one, let's keep updating it. So do we have one?
In terms of
our systems.
IT?
Yeah.
Yes, there are redundancies. A backup system was approved by the village board sometime last year to back up our storage server. So we do have some items in place. Requirements are constantly changing as, you know, widespread attacks kind of expose new vulnerabilities in the system. So CGIS, as Chief O'Shea mentioned, is constantly making new requirements for public safety side. And a lot of that applies to village wide. There's a lot of sensitive information that we have in place, and we need to protect it. So we are working with our IT provider to kind of stay abreast of those.
I trust you guys are on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
All right. Any further questions for Matt and the team? Great job. Thank you.
No, great job. I would echo your suggestion that any of the amounts of projects that are either going to be grant funded, or if you're pursuing grant funds, I should say, it'd be good to highlight so people, our residents, would know we're just not relying on taxing them. We're trying to seek other revenues. So
yeah, and you guys are doing a great job.
Yeah,
doing
you are.
Toot our horn.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting some big dollars. Yeah, Seth.
Big shoes to fill, Seth.
Let's get it for Seth. Yeah, great
so
idea.
So great. We'll
definitely make a point to point that out.
Yeah, no, they're great grants, and we're grateful for it, for what we are getting from the department, from our legislative leaders and others. Okay. Well, great. Super. So hearing no other further questions, thank you. I know we'll hear more later on and get to vote later on. So I appreciate everyone's attention to this. I guess we're ready. No executive session. So we're ready to adjourn. If I get a motion in a second.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All right.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
President Odusi. Yes. Meeting adjourned.